This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. The best NHL analysis and insight. It's what's on the lunch menu. Eat up. You're listening to Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Plenty of news, NHL and otherwise, mainly of the Olympic variety today on Hockey Central at noon. Jeff Merrick in for Darren Millard alongside John Shannon and Gord Stellick. 8 games last night, 5 games this evening around the NHL, a pair of them on Sportsnet. Calgary is in New Jersey. Edmonton is in Carolina. Anaheim, by the way, plays Florida. Both Alexander Barkov, Jonathan Huberto, both cleared to play. The Islanders in the can-they-make-it-to-the-playoffs game against the Detroit Red Wings, who are in very unfamiliar territory. Last in the Eastern Conference, the Columbus Blue Jackets take on the Pittsburgh Penguins in what is always a spirited game. We'll start with a little thing we call about last night. And we lead Leafs. And so this is the second game in a row where the Maple Leafs have had it handed to them, allowing 11 goals in 2 games last night at the hands of new head coach Mike Yeo and the St. Louis Blues. Gordy, you did pre, you did intermission, you did post.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on the Leafs game last night?
Well, you know, it's before the game, a day earlier, Mitch Marner, as we've talked about, NHL Rookie of the Month for January. So you get kind of a perspective of the season. 3 different players. NHL Rookie of the Month, yep. Nylander, Austin Matthews, him. So about what's gone right. And then you get the week where, okay, I don't know whether it's come back to earth. It's a blip, whatever it may be. I will say from the St. Louis Blues point of view, what a perfect game. They had all these storylines. First game, Mike Yeo's coaching. Marty Brodeur's helping Jake Allen to become an NHL goaltender again. The Bob Plager ceremony, you name it, and a wonderful guy being honored. Then the game was delayed and delayed and delayed. But the first period, the Leafs got the jump, had the 1-0 lead. Yep. And then it was, you know, kind of thing that what Mike Babcock says, you got to play 60 minutes. And they've been getting away with not playing 60 minutes because they come back and find ways to win games. And so you hope it's a life lesson. But it ends up being a dominating game by the St. Louis Blues. Like the Dallas Star game, you thought they might have been able to come back a bit. But
it's because no one's ever out of the game when you play the Dallas Stars.
Best money spent is going to a Dallas Stars game at home. You get everything.
The game is never
over. You get
over.
Everything.
That's right.
It does not
like
matter what time of game it is or what the score is. Yeah. The game is never over in Dallas.
So now really, you look at and so this whole thing with other teams winning like Philadelphia, the game against Boston is huge on Saturday. And, you know, good on St. Louis, the storybook one day affair for them. And for the Maple Leafs, 3 losses in a row.
Here's what concerns me. It's the same thing that concerned me about the Dallas game. Is I think the defense is in such disarray, even with Morgan Riley coming back. It appears to me that, you know, we've given such TLC to the young rookies and the forwards and and the style of game that Mike Babcock is playing. But I'll tell you what, Dallas did it on Tuesday, last night again, anything down low, the Maple Leafs are just getting pushed around. And the ability for a team that has been, you know, they've been all over the Blues for not forechecking. Mm-hmm. The Dallas Stars are not supposed to be a great forechecking team. All they did was, you know, bump and grind the Leaf defenseman off the puck and created opportunities. That to me, in the end, if you know, in Mike breaking down his video, he's got to look at the guys he's got on the ice in the corners, that they are not doing their jobs. You know, and I'm sorry to you, I hate jargon, but below the dots. Mm-hmm. They are not doing it below the dots. And, you know, that is a concern going into Boston.
Well, and you look at, okay, they're still the 30th place team last year. Okay, vastly improved, but 30th place. So the start of the year, they don't win games scoring 1 goal. Most teams don't. Start of the year, they were blowing 2-goal leads, even 3-goal leads. Then they got better. They started blowing 2-goal leads, but winning. Okay, so, but it was the same kind of mantra about no element of being able to be urgent enough to shut it down. They found a way to average 5 goals a game for a while. Well, that they were lacking four of them for 5 last night.
And I mean, it also goes to Freddie Anderson's value when they were going, you know, and you know
Freddie,
what?
Last 2 games, Freddie hasn't been good.
No, that's right. And so all of a sudden, when you're most important player is not playing at peak, potential. Mm-hmm. You've got a problem, and all of a sudden, because from the time I think it was the Tampa game. The time of the Tampa game where Babcock wouldn't pull him after two.
Yep.
Freddie Anderson has been the MVP of this team. And then the last two games, I think he's fallen on, you know, that he's been a bit of a liability.
Interesting point about the defense, though. This is a recent phenomenon, specifically last two games, okay? The two games post-All-Star.
Yep.
But, you know, before that, I kind of think that the Maple Leafs, you know, their soft spot hasn't been the blue line. Do they have the number one? Do they have the Drew Doughty, the Erik Karlsson, the Brent No, they don't have that guy. But as a unit, whether it's holding blue line, whether it's forcing a dump in at the blue line, whether it's moving the puck through the neutral zone, I think it's a really underrated blue line. Granted, the last two games, I mean, Dallas was statue practice. I mean, how many defensemen did you see standing in Dallas? It was Brett Ritchie dancing, Devin Shore dancing. These guys shouldn't dance around you in the defensive zone, but they were. Yesterday we saw it. But is it enough to say it's a pattern yet is my issue. I know there's concern for the last two games, but do we have enough to say this is who they are right now? Because up until the last two games, I kind of like the D.
Well, the D's been okay because Anderson's been okay. That's what I would say. I mean, what we saw in the last two games, we saw the old Jake Gardner. You know, when you talk about Devin Shore skating around yep. Gardner, come on. That to me, the way Babcock preaches the game and coaches the game, even in the Philadelphia game at the start of this road trip, I know it was a long time ago, but the start of the road trip, everybody was too aggressive. You know, that's how the Flyers got scoring opportunities. And that, to me, that's where if I'm on that plane and the charter from St. Louis to Boston, that would be where my biggest concern is.
Well, it starts with a game-winning goal by the Philadelphia Flyers. The Leafs were on the verge of getting a point in a game they didn't deserve. It was against the fourth line. And a lot of late, it's been third-line, fourth-line goals. Not the Stars scoring against them. Like Shanny says, one is the goaltender being excellent. And the other part is when you're playing more of the game in the other team's zone, like when the forwards are clicking, it's not so much their two-way play. It's more that if the puck ain't back there, then you're not going to get scored against. So, it's funny you see, again, getting the minutiae of the game. Like, you look at Roman Polak turning away and coughing the puck up, and you kind of go, okay.
He had a tough night.
Yeah, but those are the kind of plays that you got to be able to stay away from when you have an ordinary defense corps against a pretty good team like the Blues. I mean, and those are the types of things that they really have had happen anyway, but they've been getting five goals.
And that's what this edition of the Maple Leafs all season long have been able to stop after a certain part when it does start to look like a trend.
Yeah.
You know, Babcock has a huge ability to stop the bleeding. That's why the game in Boston is that much more important.
Well, he's gonna coach, when I say coach for the first time this year, that's being a little flippant. That's not accurate. But it's funny, the lines have been static. Pretty well static. And he's kind of looked and he's been, you know, challenging the guys, teaching them, but he's been happy. The kids have been playing good two-way hockey. Yeah. So last night, he changes the three lines, doesn't like it, changes them back, and then doesn't like that either. So, and all of a sudden, whether it's the defensive play or other things, now the minutiae has to come in a little bit more if you really seriously want to take a run at the playoffs.
Babcock's interesting because he is a hard line matcher, and you know the Leafs are in trouble when he starts juggling the lines, when he starts moving bodies around, because generally he's not a coach that likes to do that. And he'll match hard. Like, he is one of the top, you know, hard line matchers in the game, and you sort of know they're in trouble when they start mixing up the lines. I want to mention Kelly Rudy's going to be joining us here in about 10 minutes' time.
Well, is he finished his nap?
Kelly is in New Jersey for the Flames-Devils game. Hockey Night in Canada analyst, also covers the Calgary Flames. We'll talk to him about Patrick Marleau, who last night scored goal number 500. We'll also talk to Mark Scheifele. John, working with you last night, it became pretty obvious you're a big fan of Mark Scheifele, and for good reason. Well, double nickels in Winnipeg's good.
All the way back to Barry. Let's face it, all the way back to Barry in the OHL, I think that Scheifele, you're the draft freak, Jeffy, so you're the one that reminded us of the...
Is the word freak ever a compliment?
No, yeah, it is.
Okay.
It is now.
I just want to make sure.
In 2017...
Good. I just felt a little awkward.
If you're a freak, you're okay.
John says it lovingly.
Okay. I want to make sure.
Anyway, so and you were the one who reminded us of Kevin Cheveldayoff's dilemma of Sean Couturier or Mark Scheifele.
Totally.
Took Scheifele.
Everyone was screaming for Sean Couturier, high-scoring player coming out of Quebec League.
Yeah, I've dwelled on this a lot this season, but when you looked at the 23 and under team at the World Cup Everybody raved about Matthews, raved about McDavid, and rightly so. Yep. But to me, Mark Scheifele was the glue of that team.
It was good.
Mark Scheifele, I mean, and you know, when there was pushback needed, I mean, I still remember a couple times skating off on a line change, going to the bench, just chirping the other team. I mean, I love the way this guy plays. And he's the reason why, and one of the big reasons why you think, well, the Jets have to be better than this. The Jets have to be better than this. Now they've won three in a row. They're certainly back in the playoff hunt, and a lot of it's because of what Scheifele does. I'm this is not a knock at Blake Wheeler at all, but to me, Mark Scheifele is the captain of that team.
What about also getting him for the first time ever, a current NHL player on our trade deadline show? Because he's a general manager in waiting. Even though he's got 20 years, he can probably play. Yeah. Mark Scheifele.
Mark Scheifele.
Yeah, he could be the current guy that could talk hockey about, you know, all those kinds of things.
That's all he wants to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, game, like, going to go watch the nightcaps. Going to go watch the games. Going to watch
More skilled Bruce Boudreau as a player. And that's not a knock against Bruce. I mean, just someone that basically always thought along those kind of lines.
I want to go back to that the Maple Leafs game last night, but off the Maple Leafs page, not on the St. Louis page.
Yeah.
Always interesting to see what happens. Game one, when a new coach takes over, and three people, in my mind, distinguished themselves.
The independent contractors?
All three independent contractors, as per Doug Armstrong. Unionized somehow.
Well,
Vlad Tarasenko, okay. Alex Steen, Colton Parayko were the three that popped for me, John.
Yeah. And I'm going to take issue with, I mean, I don't think anybody on defense was an independent contractor. I think the whole issue with the Blues was up front, and guys like Alex Steen.
If you're listening on radio, doing the goalie motion here. You couldn't get a save, bud.
Exactly. No, that's what I'm saying.
Marty Brodeur cured it.
But you know, hey, listen,
showed him.
In the
whispering
end, I think it just proved it one more time that it was time for Ken. It was time. And it probably should have, he probably shouldn't have started the season if this was supposed to be the end game. But, I mean, Vlady Tarasenko, when he's motivated, when he's focused, I mean, he's one of the top five players in the National Hockey League.
Going away.
You know, I mean, he's better than Artemi Panarin. He is right up there.
When you look at pure goal scorers, I know we make a lot about Patrick Laine, a lot about Alexander Ovechkin. I'll take Vladimir Tarasenko up against anyone in the game at any time.
Well, he gave one of those shots that you saw that, you know, there's maybe nobody else that can quite do what he got in the one goal last night. And, you know, it's interesting about the whole Ken Hitchcock thing and the independent contractors that, like, Robin Leonard's tantrum a couple weeks ago was something that was handled well by the Sabres. There was a specific reason and wearing down about, well, maybe not, whatever.
Let's wait until the draft.
Yeah, I'm with you, John.
Bruce Boudreau with Alexander Ovechkin, the time that he didn't put him on the power play and gave him that. Ovi gave him more than that, okay? And that was turning the corner. And to see the replay again, I hadn't seen it in a while, about Tarasenko. I mean, it's still a young player, and Ken Hitchcock.
April 23rd.
And that's kind of, that's not a one-off spur-of-the-moment thing. I'm signed for X number of years at this kind of stuff. And,
$7.5 million on a long-term deal.
And that's a series they won. They won that. They lost that game.
Because that was game six, right?
That was game six.
Yeah. Handshake.
And they won that series. Yeah, you know what? I'm an unabashed Ken Hitchcock fan. I like him. I like talking to him about the game. He's fun to be around. But you know what? Sometimes it's time. Sometimes that's just a reality.
Did you like anyone else last night? Tarasenko is one thing. And
well,
you'll never see him do one. It's remarkable the way you look at players' patterns. And John and I talked about this last night. There's that area out in front of the net called the home plate.
Yeah,
and he always brings the puck there, and that's where he shoots from. You'll never see him take one-timers.
One
of the rarest visuals in the NHL is one-timers for Tarasenko because he doesn't do them. He'll grab it, get into that home plate area, and it's gone.
You know, I do think you have to mention Jake Allen.
Good point.
Any of the people you read or talked to or listened to last night at some point or even this morning, there was, and maybe it's the placebo effect too. He looked better in that. He looked more confident. He looked like somebody had his back. And maybe those 2 days with Marty on the ice did help and cleared any of the emotion and any of the insecurities that he had to the season so far.
You know, early on, though, it's funny. Every game, so the first 20 minutes, unlike the Dallas game where the Leafs were out of it after one period of play, this this time, if you want to quantify it, they've improved. They were out of it after 40 minutes of play. But first period, Freddie Anderson stops Perron on a breakaway. Okay, yep. JVR misses wide open net. Leafs get the 1-0 lead. You know, a couple of, and all of a sudden something like that, and you're 2-0, and who knows how it goes for Jake Allen and that. So he never really had to face any pressure. The team got the lead, so it's a good kind of game when you're trying to get a goaltender back in the groove. And to his credit, he played in the groove.
The other thing you really liked last night, two other things. Bob Plager's salute. I know it was long. He spoke for 25, 26 minutes. But man, oh man, when you know the blood, sweat, and tears that Bob Plager has put in for that organization, his 50th year with the Blues in their 50th year, it was remarkable. And the sweaters.
Oh, gorgeous.
I love it. And the almost baby Blues. But the original Blues sweaters that they wore at the outdoor game on Jan 2nd, they wore last night. I assume they're going to wear them against the original six teams.
And they're like the better color than the powder blue polyester suits we had for our high school graduation, the three-piece. I mean,
I wore one of those powder blue polyester jackets for a long time.
It kept John single for a number of years, I assure you.
Yeah, but it gave him access every building. You wore that, you were gold.
Yeah, they thought I was an usher. Yeah.
They had, what about, you know, with the banner? What about his banner going halfway, and then they brought Barkley Plager's banner down halfway, and the two of them went up. And if you had any sense about Barkley Plager, that was his idol. That was the patriarch of it. And I can remember when Rob Ramage became a Toronto Maple Leaf, and I got a lot of respect for Rob Ramage. And just chatting about things, he said, what numbers are available? And name some. And then when he said 8, that'll be it for Barkley.
Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah. If you talk to Scotty Bowman, he'll tell you the story of the old OHA days with Peterborough and Guelph and those two, Barkley and Bob, I believe, was those two fighting under the stand, brother against brother.
Right.
Off of the ice. Loved each other and as brothers playing hockey often. Yeah. You know, it was a real nice touch. And you hear, I won't dwell on this too much, but you hear the love.
Why not? It's hockey. We love it.
Well, we got to get to here. I know. It's wonderful. But hearing him talk about Noel Picard, I know it's a small thing.
Yep.
I know it's a really small thing, but hearing him talk about his D partner, hearing the way he talked, we all think, you know, Noel Picard, the guy flipping Bobby Orr in the famous picture, but we tend to, you know, history's forgotten a lot of players. And John and I were talking about this last night. When you talk about raw bone tough hockey players, of that era, Noel Picard has to be right up around the top of that list. And to hear him talk about him last night.
Well, they were the Broad Street Bullies before they were the Broad Street Bullies.
You beat me to it. Ed Snyder hated the way the St. Louis Blues pushed Philadelphia around regular season and in playoffs. And he said, if they're going to do that,
Picard
we're going to do
specifically.
It.
Picard specifically.
Well,
that
Picard
was the flyer. He was the flyer killer.
Picard and the Plagers.
Yep.
And your discussion about Barkley Gordy is absolutely bang on. Barkley Plager, you could not find a greater person. I was fortunate for many years to have palled around with the late, great Dan Kelly. And so when the Blues came to Western Canada, I was one of the boys with Dan and Red Berenson and Barkley Plager. And man, oh man, those are memories you can't forget and you'll never give away.
We're going to get a couple of quick thoughts and an update before we get to Kelly Rudy, who'll join us here in a couple of moments to talk about Patrick Marleau, on what's happening in New York City right now in the IOC, the IIHF, the NHL, and the NHL Players Association, all in the same place, John, for the first time.
First time for this negotiation, yeah. It's the meeting actually starts at 1 o'clock Eastern time, and Thomas Bach, the president of the IOC, is finally in the fray, if you want to put it that way. I'm not, you know, and the politics of hockey and the politics of sports, I'm not sure how he got there. Maybe we'll find out later today. My belief is that Rene Fassel, probably, who he doesn't get along with very well, asked him to come. But I really have a feeling that this is Donald Fehr at his finest in trying to manipulate the world at the Olympic level. And Don has a huge background. He was a member of the USOC for many years. Trying to make sure and trying to ensure that the players go to the Olympics in 2018 in South Korea. What we're going to hear from Bach, I don't think anybody knows right now. Whether it's here's our stance, we're not going to change it, or yes, we've changed our opinion. What do you need? And Rene Fassel has really, in many ways, is now taking a back seat to the president of the IOC. The other thing to put in context, guys, about this is anytime the game is to grow, we talk about going to Europe, we talk about going to Asia, they need Players Association permission to do that. The league does. So the league has been talking about the game in China, a Vancouver-Los Angeles preseason game. We know that the Senators are on a list to go in November to Europe, probably to Sweden. Erik Karlsson, Daniel Alfredsson, makes sense. But they need Players Association permission to do that. The question is how does Don Fehr leverage that in order to leverage the Olympics? And then how does Beijing in 2022 play into it? This is a Rubik's Cube. Mm-hmm. This is not just, well, we need the money, we're going to South Korea. This is a Rubik's Cube of negotiations.
More on that in a couple of moments. In the meantime, Kelly Rudy joins us now from Hockey Night in Canada, covering the Calgary Flames as well. They face off against the New Jersey Devils a little bit later on this evening. But Kelly, we're not talking about the Calgary Flames. I want to talk about a former billet of yours. Patrick Marleau scores goal number 500 yesterday. The San Jose Sharks are up. Everybody up and down the bench, from Couture to Thornton to Carlson to Burns. Everyone is ecstatic. How did you feel when you saw someone who roomed with you in his rookie year score goal number 500?
Well, first of all, Jeff, to make it clear, doesn't the definition of billet mean that there was some sort of money transfer?
I suppose.
That clearly didn't take place. That was, let's just say Pat had free room and board, but we loved it. He was like a son to me. I was, 37 years old, I guess, at the time. And Pat came in at 18, and so you can imagine my joy last night to watch the goal and to see that smile on his face. I mean, that hasn't changed since he moved in with us in 1997, I believe it was. And here's this guy that was raised properly in Aneroid, Saskatchewan. All those same sort of qualities that he came to San Jose with. He's never changed, and for those reasons and many others, I was one of the happiest guys around yesterday.
Kelly, what is one attribute that Marleau has as a player that nobody would really know about? Is there something that he does that is totally underappreciated?
Yeah, John. He has an extreme burning desire to get better and better. And he looks kind of like nonchalant sometimes, and as though he's so even keeled that he looks as though he's a little bit complacent, but he isn't. That's the one thing that I noticed about him that year, is that he's got this drive that you rarely ever see, but it's always there and it's always turned on. And he's a really proud guy. Like most athletes, but for him, I think that he's a guy that really thrives because of his competitive nature, which he looks kind of stoic on the ice, but underneath the surface, he's really competitive.
Only the 10th guy to get 500 goals with one team, and that's unusual nowadays. Kelly is being able to stay with the same team, which is, did you ever think along the way that it might have been better for him to go somewhere else, that a different market, a different setup? I mean, it's very unusual in a market like San Jose, anyway, to stay all that time.
You know, Gord, I did. I think it's about 5 or 6 years ago, and I was kind of wondering if that wouldn't be a better option for him, and simply because we've seen with other guys, whether it's Chris Chelios or other guys, that they're in a market. Like, I remember Chelios when he was nearing his final days with Chicago. He wasn't near the player that he had been for a number of years. And when he went to Detroit, just totally rejuvenated him. And you know, then I look at Pat and I'm thinking, maybe I jumped the gun a little bit here, that he didn't need a change of scenery. It was just that, you know, every career has some highs and lows. And he might have just been in a situation where it wasn't perfect for him, and, you know, trying to figure out role and all that kind of stuff. So, but now when you really look at it, guys, isn't that what we all dream about? That you stay in one organization for the rest of your life or your whole life. You play extremely well. You're loved, and hopefully you win cups. Now, the premium example, I think, most recently would be Stevie Yzerman, that had an amazing career, stayed there forever, and has now since moved on. But in Pat's case, I think it's great that it's one organization.
How long do you think he can play?
I'm sure you looked at one of our shows last year. Reaching Gordie Howe's record is in sight if he wants to do it. Yeah. I think, first of all, he's blessed genetically. There's no question about that. That I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think he's only missed 20-some games in his entire career. I mean, for a guy to play that long and only miss that few games, that tells you just how lucky he is in that department. But I think it's up to him. I do think that he can play another 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
And
wow.
If he can stay healthy, he might be able to break Gordie Howe's record for most games played.
That's amazing when you consider West Coast travel, too.
Well, yeah, you're right. It's exactly right.
You know, with Kelly Rudy from Hockey Night in Canada, the first time I can recall specifically, the first time I saw Patrick Marleau, one thing stood out to me. How can a guy that big move his feet like that? Kelly, excuse me. How can a big guy like that skate so quickly, move his feet like that? What was the one thing, Kelly, that stood out to you when you first saw Patrick Marleau play?
That was it. And how effortless his skating stride looked to be. I recall early practices were at the San Jose main arena where we're playing games on our practice rink. And Pat, everything was coming together for Pat. It looked like he was going to make the team. And Daryl Sutter, our coach, I know there were some conversations about what's best for him, go back to Seattle or stay. And standing by the boards, and I'm admiring this young kid. And I don't think at the time I had made up my mind about whether I was going to ask him to live with us or not. I was just trying to figure out where he might fit in. And I'm standing by the boards, and Tony Granato skates up next to me, and he goes, man, that kid. It looks so easy to him, but he goes, I'm trying my best to keep up to him, and I can't. And Tony was a great skater, as you guys will recall. So that's how beautiful he is in terms of skating. And again, back then, I would say for a kid that age, it might have been a perfect stride. And he hasn't lost a step. I mean, you look at his goals recently, and last night was a great example, right? So on the two-on-one with Pavelski, gets that that pass, and all in one quick motion, that same patented quick release. In fact, I talked to Ryan Clough with the Devils this morning about it, that is, if Pat was going to score a goal for his 500th, that was the perfect goal, because it's exactly what all of us think of him in terms of that release.
You know, Kelly, a lot of people, he not thought of as the number one shark, quite often somebody else, whether it's Thornton or other people, so sort of got maybe lost in the shuffle in some people's perception. Bobby Clark, when he talked about Eric Lindros going to the Hall of Fame, he mentioned he thought Eric Lindros brought the best out of John LeClair, and John LeClair brought the best out of Eric Lindros, that they never were quite the same without each other. And I'm curious, is there a shark that Patrick Marleau's brought the best out of, and is there a player that brings the best out of Patrick Marleau?
I would say Joe Thornton. I think that there's that competitiveness between the two of them. And I think of the first game that the Sharks played after they acquired Thornton. And I can't quite remember, but I believe Patrick had 4 points or something like that. It was kind of like, yeah, we're really happy to have you, but hey, I'm pretty good here too. And I think that sort of challenge, the way they challenge each other, is a really healthy thing. In fact, I love Joe Pavelski. Everybody does. He's a super complete player and all that. But I was kind of hopeful when Pat was going to score his 500th that Joe Thornton would have been involved in some way. Unfortunately, he wasn't, but I'm sure they're going to have some more goals here down the road.
Kelly, we're up against it. Before we let you go, tonight the Calgary Flames taking on the New Jersey Devils. You know, there's that five-man unit that Calgary has, which is, I think, Stanley Cup quality, not just playoff quality. That's Backlund, Frolik, Tkachuk. When Giordano and Hamilton are on the points, no one else touches the puck. What is the issue with the Calgary Flames? What do they need to sneak into the playoffs?
I think the ability, and I think when I talk about the Flames, I'm speaking about a lot of teams around the league, the ability to repeat their performances. So I look at their game Wednesday versus Minnesota, and that was maybe their best game of the season. And I know I was talking to some people going into the game, and they're going, oh boy, Calgary's going to be in tough. And and now they've swept Minnesota in their three-game series. If they can find a way to get more and more consistent and play closer to the standard that they set on Wednesday, then they can be a playoff team.
And Kelly, to answer your question from earlier on, in 18 and a half seasons, Marleau has missed just 31 games. This is amazing. Just 31
right.
games and has played 592 consecutive games since 08-09.
Actually, the most games he missed, Kelly, was when he roomed with you.
I know.
By the way, Elliot or Johnson?
It's Elliot. Glenn Gullickson has that new model. You win, you're in. So Elliot has now won two in a row, so he stays
perfect. Kelly, thanks as always for stopping by and sharing some of your memories of Patrick Marleau and previewing tonight's game. Much appreciated.
Yeah, my pleasure, gentlemen. Have a great show.
There is Kelly Rudy from Hockey Night in Canada.
By the way, so Marleau, when he retires, will obviously have his number retired in San Jose. But what number will it be?
Because he's had...
two numbers.
Yeah. I see him as 12.
Yeah, so do I. But
when like, if you want to play the number game, because we've seen this with, you can play the jersey game, you can play the number game. Yeah. When I say a player's name, what number do you see him at? When I always see him as 12.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, I do now, but I did know that he started at 14.
Yeah.
And he wore it, and it wasn't as if he wore it for 1 year. He wore 14 for 4 years.
Yeah. But why'd he change?
I think, well, because the veteran, remember, as a rookie, he probably wouldn't have first picked. Probably had the pick.
Was he 12 in Seattle? Do we know?
I think he was 12.
That might have been it.
But obviously, if he made this change, this is the number he aspired to get, so he would do that.
No, I'm just. Yeah. To me, that's the Bobby Hull, Bobby Orr thing. You know, what? You know, how many, 7, 16, 9.
Sure.
And I think Orr was 27 and, I think it was 27 and 4. So.
But I was looking forward more to find out, like, what do you think he owes Kelly in rent when you add interest all the years later? And the other one, when you said to him, Elliot or Johnson, I thought he was going to pick if he liked Elliot Friedman or Chris Johnson better. So we never found that out.
Want a Whopper?
We know that answer.
You want a Whopper or something here? The Nashville Predators have placed Mike Ribeiro on waivers.
Yeah.
It's been rumored for a couple of weeks now he's requested a trade or wanted out of Nashville. Big win for Nashville yesterday, 2-0.
It's kind of like a mini Edmonton burger. Oilers.
That's kind of slider. That's a slider.
That's a slider. That's a slider.
Here's a slider.
It's not a big
name. It's a big name. It's a big name with some baggage attached to it and some controversy attached to it.
But we're disappointed. The Whopper thing.
An old friend of ours wore 12 that first year in San Jose.
Who was it?
Ronnie Sutter.
Oh, did Ron wear 12?
Oh, wow.
Yep.
There you go. Well, that's part of your answer. We hit a break here on Hockey Central, and then when we come back, a little tour around the NHL, preview some of the games going on this evening, and Mark Scheifele of the Winnipeg Jets will stop by as well. So get ready, John Shannon. The Mark Scheifele fan club gets fired up here in a couple of moments. Jeff Merrick in for Darren Millar, John Shannon, Gord Stellick, Hockey Central at noon, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, simulcast on the NHL Network stateside.
Hockey Central at noon is Hockey Central at any time you want it to be. When you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. Jeff Merrick in for Darren Millar.
This is
Hockey
about the
Central
Seals.
At noon.
About the Seals.
That's right. John Shannon and I just having a conversation about the California Seals. That that documentary is coming out shortly.
February 6th, I think it'll be on iTunes.
It'll be like the Spirit of St. Louis one for basketball. That was a great one. The two-year ABA team that had Bob Costas as their play-by-play guy.
Yep.
And whatever. I mean, so.
And until recently, the two brothers that owned the team were getting their TV revenue for the NBA.
Now,
in perpetuity, I know.
That was a team that had some of the more interesting marketing initiatives we've ever seen. One of them being paying a woman to streak the game to generate buzz.
Yeah.
Wonder if that's in the documentary. The other was, you know where they would hand out free tickets? Barber shops. They would give barbers free tickets.
Is that Charlie Finley stuff?
Charlie Finley.
See, but Charlie Finley's year four.
I know. The first three and a half years
of this franchise were soap opera.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute soap opera. Yeah. The original owner, Barry Van Gerbig, was actually Bing Crosby's business manager.
Yep.
And, I mean, the stories, God bless him, one of my dear friends, Frank Selke, Jr., we used to wax poetic about the Seals every Thursday. I had always had a list of questions about what was going with the Seals, and I mean, they had a coach. They hired a coach. The coach didn't even make the first game. Bert Olmsted.
Bert Olmsted. That's right. Yeah.
So I mean, it was a fascinating time.
Bill Torrey came out of there.
Torrey was the business manager for Ice Follies in Pittsburgh.
He didn't last very long though.
Well, they were there when Finley took over. They were both there.
Was he still there?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
There's a great shot in the doc of Finley at his first press conference saying, I don't know anything about hockey. And Frank and Bill are in the back dais with their hands in their heads, I mean, knowing that they were sunk.
The idea of giving out the tickets to the barbershop, just to get it out there, they wanted to attract as many barbers as they could to go to the games, thinking that barbers have about, I don't know, 20 people sitting in their chair every day. Wow. And all of a sudden, the barber has something to talk about the next day. So he's got 20 people he can talk to about the California Seals.
Worked
game.
For baseball, I'm
that
sure.
That was the marketing. Yep. One of the marketing initiatives for the Seals.
And the white skates for a little bit.
But those were brief. I know we make a lot about the white skates. But
well, the problem with the white skates was, in those days, most paints that would...
They would chip.
Well, they were also lead-based. Yeah. So they were, the skates that the Seals were a ton heavier than anybody else on the ice. So,
ask Craig Patrick about those, right?
Oh, sure. Carol Vadney used to tell stories about it, too.
We're going
to
bring aboard Mark Scheifele here in a couple of moments. In the meantime, the Islanders... Alexei Marchenko, by the way, on waivers, some news and notes. Brendan Smith returns tonight as the Islanders face off against the Red Wings. You know, the Islanders may just, dare I say it, sneak into the playoffs.
Well, it's funny. We talked a lot about St. Louis and the firing of Ken Hitchcock. I think Doug Waite should be blamed for that, too. Because I think that any owner or any manager looks at, hey, make a coaching change and get a turnaround. Doug Waite's, I think, 5-0-1 since he took over. The team is...
So Tom Rowe kept coaches safe for a while, essentially, is what you're saying?
I have no comment. Okay. I'm not allowed to talk about the Panthers.
All right, very good.
Mike Sullivan didn't win his first four games last year.
That's
so,
right.
So Doug Waite has a chance to be the Mike Sullivan, though, even better starting off. And they're no longer sneaking around. They're coming through the front door. I mean, that team, when you get on a roll, and that's going to be a point of difference for any team in that clustered group there.
But didn't you always like their defense? Honestly, didn't you always like the Islander defense with Boychuk and Hamonic?
And when they added those couple of guys a couple summers ago.
I like Letty a lot.
But that cemented it all. Then and then Hamonic, when he was up for trade for that brief period of time, apparently, everyone said, like, wow, this is a quality guy to get and a quality salary cap hit. And now you got John Tavares, who is... he always plays like John Tavares, but even more so of late. And goaltending. And you got rid of the third goaltender.
Yeah.
You know, like
now, and Garth wanted that third goalie around. I mean, let's face it. I think Garth had an awful summer last year. And I think Garth will admit that he had an awful summer.
Is that because they rolled the dice thinking they were going to get Stamkos? They weren't going to negotiate with Oposo. They wanted to keep things available for Stamkos.
Listen, I mean, Garth Snow's a smart guy. You can't mortgage the future just because you have a chance.
Then explain not working things out with Oposo. I've never understood it.
My explanation of this, and I have not talked to Garth about this, is but every time you work a long period of time with a star that you think is underachieving, you're too close to the mirror. You're too close. You cannot see all the good traits that this guy brings. And I think that's exactly what happened with them and Oposo.
Well, he's fine. And first of all, Stamkos declared before free agent day, so it gave them a chance to get back into it. But I agree with John about, it's funny that you, Jim Poplinski is a good friend. He kids that he played for Toronto Marlies, but he played for the Toronto Marlies, right? Yeah. So Toronto scouts watched him all the time and picked him apart.
Yes.
And he got drafted in the fourth round by the Flames where he grew up right there. Kyle Oposo, they were saying goodbye to last January for some reason.
But you know who the
Franz Nielsen was a guy they were looking at.
Franz Nielsen, they should have never gotten rid of Franz Nielsen.
But you know, the poster boy for that was John Tavares. You want to talk about overscouted? There was nobody more overscouted. He comes in as an exception, so you got an extra year to overscout. But still, he goes first overall.
That's how good he is.
Oh, of course he is.
That's how good he is. I'm just saying they had done a really good job with the island building support, building a support unit for John. And I think Doug Waite's going to do a good job. I think Garth had an awful summer, and they're paying for it.
Got to get to our guest here. From one great center to another, Mark Scheifele, the Winnipeg Jets, joins us. Mark, good afternoon. Thanks so much for doing this, and congratulations on the first three-game winning streak of the season. What do you attribute this to?
Thank you. Yeah, definitely didn't want to take this long to do that, but I'm definitely happy it's now, and hopefully we can go on a roll from here.
So there are those of us that have seen you play since Barrie and thought you were going to be a star in this league. My question, though, Mark, is about your Jets team. I look at the individual parts on your Jets team, yourself and Ehlers and Patrick, you know, and Blake and Dustin. How come you're not better? How come you're not? You should be better.
I don't have an answer for you. That's the way hockey is. This league is a good league. You see it every year. There's so much turnaround. There's so much. Every team gets better and better. And obviously, we want to be on the the other side of it. We want to be the team that's kind of on the inside looking out. But, you know, we have a tough stretch coming up here, and we got to be ready for it to be able to get into the playoffs.
Well, I guess getting better, and it's a good life lesson on perseverance. A guy named Andre Pavlik, who probably you thought was in the scrap heap, all of a sudden he's the guy doing it once again.
Yeah, you know, he's been playing great for us the last few games. You know, obviously, Hellebuck and Hutchinson, we weren't giving them a lot of help, you know, early in the season. But, you know, now it's about winning games. You know, we need to, you know, buckle down. If we want to make the playoffs, you know, we have a legitimate chance to you know, go on a roll and get into the playoffs. And that's what we're going to try to do here. And hopefully we can continue to string some wins together.
On Andre, just curious, with the Moose playing at MTS, and I assume practicing in the same facility that you do, did you always, were there was always contact with a guy like Andre?
It's tough because, you know, usually when we're home, they're away. When they're home, we're away. So it's tough to see them a lot. They'll practice at the practice rink. If we're at home, we'll be practicing at the MTS Center. So it makes it tough. But you'll see him around. Obviously, when you see him, he's a good friend of all of ours. And you see him, and obviously you keep track of, you know, how the Moose are doing. And obviously, he's playing really well, and he's kind of brought that over to us.
Mark Scheifele of the Winnipeg Jets joins us now. When you look at line combinations and 5-on-5 and who's getting it done and who's scoring the goals, you know, may come as a surprise to a lot of people, but that line of Zucker, Koivu, and Granlund in Minnesota is tearing apart the league. So is your line with yourself alongside Nick Ehlers and Patrick Laine. Why is that so successful? What makes the three of you guys click?
Well, I've actually been playing with Wheeler and Kopp the last four games, and we've
how's that line doing? Really.
Good research, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Oh, zing,
bang.
But it's been going really good. I don't think I would trade Blake Wheeler for anyone. He's unbelievable. He makes the pass he made last night. You know, it's probably one of the nicest passes I've ever seen. And me and him have a lot of chemistry, and Copper's been great for us as well. He gets him on the forecheck. You know, on that goal, you know, he drove the middle, you know, opened up a lane for me, and he's had some great goals. He had the one timer against San Jose. He had a great shot against Anaheim. You know, he went on a goal scoring streak, and he's been unbelievable. And he's a guy that is just keep on getting better. And you know, it's been awesome playing with him. And you know, the last few games have been great. We've been generating a lot. You know, a lot of offensive zone time. You know, playing good D, and hopefully we continue to build this chemistry together and make something great.
Before you got on, we were talking about your growth as a player, and I mentioned the World Cup and, you know, how Austin and Connor were getting all of the credit, but I thought you were the glue to that 23 and under team. Is there any residual effect of the growth from playing in that tournament for you this year?
I think it was really cool. Obviously, playing with Austin and Connor was pretty special. Those guys, you know, deserve the amount of attention they get because they're unbelievable players, and they're only getting better, which is awesome to see. But I think, you know, obviously playing in a tournament against the best is going to make you better. That experience, that you know, obviously playing on the wing because Connor was in the middle, I think helped my game. It helped me understand what it was like on the wing because I've never really played wing before. So you know, I learned a lot of things. I learned a lot of things, you know, just by playing. I learned a lot of things by guys I was playing with and against, and I think it was you know, a huge step for me.
So I have a quick one. I've got about 30 seconds or so. Most underrated, unappreciated Winnipeg Jet player that's more appreciated in the dressing room?
I think you got to go with Jacob Trouba. He's obviously everything that went on this year, you know, was tough, but he's been unbelievable for us. Him and Toby Enstrom as a combo have been great. They've been generating offense for us. They play unbelievable D against, you know, the other team's best, and you know, they're guys that we wouldn't be where we are today without those two guys. So I'm probably gonna go with Troops and Toby.
I kind of thought you might have said Brian Little there, who's legit playing with Ehlers and Laine, because he's one of those under the radar centermen, isn't he? We got about 10 seconds here.
Yeah. Brian's actually been awesome for us. I kind of forgot about him. He's a guy that stays under the radar. He, you know, doesn't you know, get a ton of media attention, but he has been great. So I'll add him to that list too.
He's outstanding. Well, continued success. Turn 3 into 4 and plenty more. Thanks so much for stopping by, Mark.
Okay, thank you.
Mark Scheifele of the
Winnipeg Jets. Did you get schooled? You got schooled, mister.
All season long, he's played on that line.
They've won three of the last four with the other guys.
Okay, so congratulations to Kopp, Wheeler, and Scheifele, double nickels.
Bang!
Back Monday, maybe.